Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is Mraz. Today's show was unlimited with great moments, laughs, and good takes. Here is the best of today's show.
So last night, could the Celtics keep the good times rolling, or would the Heat stop that momentum and seize a 3-1 series lead? Amazingly, last night was not about Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, the defensive intensity of Marcus Smart. It wasn't about Jimmy Butler. It wasn't about any of those things. Last night was not about Bam Adebayo. Last night was about a 20-year-old rookie who couldn't miss. How impressive is Pat Riley's roster? It is where we begin. Your cold open.
Butler on the left side. Backs down Kemba Walker in the lane. Back to Tyler runs the lane with a layup and in. And we'll get a timeout. Miami up 107-98. Tyler Hero takes the dish pass there from Jimmy Butler. He's got 35 and Miami on top 107-98 with 56 seconds left to go.
Those are pressure shots. We had to step up against a really good defense. He was making plays at the end of the clock, and that's a skill set that he has.
We ain't there yet. We still got one more huge game to get. So back to the drawing boards, figure it out. Can't let up. Keep our foot on the gas pedal.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
Tyler Hero has 37 points last night at 20 years old. And the Heat get game number 4 to take a 3-1 series lead. That was Heat Radio on the call, Eric Spoelstra and Jimmy Butler. Let's just talk about how dominant Tyler Hero was last night. Hero at 20 years old was so cool, was so composed, was so under control. At 20 years old in a crucial game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals, you might imagine a 20-year-old rookie, the youngest player on the floor by far, to be a little rattled, a little wide-eyed, a little deer in headlights. Never. Never for a moment. And Hero was such a steal coming out of Kentucky where that Heat team drafted him. Just such a steal. And last night, to watch him go from deep, to watch him just continue to drill big shot after big shot, he finishes with 37 points, 6 rebounds, and 3 assists. And last night, every time the Celtics seemed to be creeping a little closer, there was a big shot by Hero. And really, last night, the final score says 112-109. It wasn't as close as that because the Celtics never really had a shot with possession and a chance to tie or go in the lead in the final couple of minutes. In fact, the Heat had a double-digit lead with just a couple of minutes to play and kind of held on just from a couple of weird reviews, a jump ball situation, a pass that was awry off of Jimmy Butler's fingertips. So really the Heat somewhat dominated the fourth quarter there. And the Celtics in the first half were just dreadful, especially Jason Tatum. Now, Tatum was phenomenal in the second half, but the Celtics really dug their own hole. And for a Heat team that isn't nearly as high profile coming out of college and where they were drafted as the Celtics. I mean, Boston has five top 10 draft picks on its roster. Five of them. You have Tatum. You have Brown. You have Smart. You have Kemba. You have Hayward. The Heat don't have any. They don't have any. The Celtics have five top 10 draft picks. The Heat have zero. Pat Riley's roster is so incredible to watch come together like this. Look, when he acquired Jimmy Butler this offseason, it wasn't like Butler was still some type of unknown commodity. He was a star, and the Heat knew they needed an alpha male, and Pat Riley dumped out his bag of rings and cut the check, and so that's an easy way to acquire a star. But the rest of that roster, look how it's coming together. That's a bunch of gritty junkyard dogs, or guys that we just didn't think were going to be that good, really coming together. You have Tyler Hero, who was drafted number 13 overall. You have Bam Adebayo, drafted 14th overall. You have Goran Dragic, who was drafted in the second round, signed by the Heat as a free agent. You have Duncan Robinson, undrafted. And you have Jimmy Butler, who again is a star now, but was drafted 30th overall. I just think you have a Heat team that right now is playing greater than the sum of its parts. And last night, I thought you saw a mentally tough team versus a team that isn't so mentally tough. I thought that the Heat last night, in a spot where, again, they could easily exhale, they're up 2-1, instead came out and just in the second half when it mattered most, kept making plays, and all of those guys made plays. They all have a role. Every single one of those guys has a role. Now, we have to watch for Bam Adebayo's hand. He was holding into the end of the game yesterday, but Dragic came up with really crafty buckets. Jimmy Butler, once again, had some big moments and big buckets, 24-9. Bam Adebayo, 20-12 last night, a monster on the boards. And Tyler freaking Hero, 20 years old, 37 points in a conference final game, which puts him in rarefied air with guys like Magic Johnson. What a win by the Heat, and now they're a win away from the NBA Finals, up 3-1. Wow. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. On Twitter, DA on CBS. Merez, what'd you think about watching Tyler Hero at that age as a rookie go off last night against a very good defensive team in Boston?
Incredible, especially when you consider at Kentucky, his highest point total in the game was only 29.
Amazing.
So, he exceeded that by almost 10 points. And while a lot of credit has to go to the building of the roster, how about clap it up for Eric Spoelstra? I mean, that is a guy as a head coach who a lot of people, when he was winning titles, didn't want to give all the credit to because he was surrounded by superstars.
Yep.
This is one of the most incredible coaching jobs in NBA history. I'm really not trying to say that lightly. They're a win away from the NBA Finals with all of those parts you just rattled off. And to push all the buttons in rotation throughout the year, to find the right pieces and the right minutes for all of these guys, that is incredible NBA coaching. And I think after this year, nobody could ever look back at Eric Spoelstra's career and go, well, he's really only a name because he had LeBron, Wade, and Bosch. No. Eric Spoelstra is as good an NBA coach as we have going right now, and this year is a proven point of that.
Yes, because in almost every instance in NBA history, the team with more talent ends up winning that series. There are very, very few instances where that is not the case. And we have very few instances where a 5 seed gets all the way to the NBA Finals. It's always a top 2 seed. And the few times that it happens, it ends up going down in history, kind of like that 95 Rockets team.
Yep.
This Miami Heat team is a 5 seed. Not only beat the 4 seed of the Pacers of the first round, they swept them, beat them like a drum. They come into round 2 playing the MVP of the league for the second consecutive year and a squad that had 60 wins or was on pace for 60 wins again this season before the pandemic struck and beat them in 5. And now they're taking on a 3 seed of the Celtics that have so much more top-end talent than the Heat do. So much more. Like I said, the Celtics have 5 top 10 picks. That's talent that everybody in the league identified as this is elite talent. And Tatum and Brown are number 3 picks overall. And yet here are the Heat a win away. I mean, they've guaranteed themselves at least a Game 7 to get to the NBA Finals, which is extraordinary. But also, they've done it without having, outside of Butler, the Tier A star. And when it comes to getting that Tier A next star for the Heat, a lot of people thought that maybe Tyler Hero or Bam Adebayo might be trade bait for that next guy. You can't trade those guys now. Those guys are so valuable. Those guys are so good. They have the ability to really develop into stars. And there's no way you would trade Tyler Hero. His postseason has been amazing. And last night, to do 37 in that spot, you can't ever give him away. So the Heat are sitting pretty right now in the Eastern Conference Finals.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Remember, you can watch the DA show every single day on watchda.com. That's available on any device, anywhere. You can watch us on your phone, on your tablet, on your PC or desktop, even your smart TV. Go to watchda.com. Also, watch us on Twitch as well, the streaming platform. We have our own CBS Sports Radio channel there, and you can watch us inside the radio.com app. So how about that? Here's your best audio of the day, starting with Jerry Jones and our Dallas affiliate, 105.3 The Fan, on how the Cowboys' comeback came to be against the Falcons without the use of numbers.
You can take statistics or you can take the odds. And if that's the way you play it, then you eliminate about 80% of what goes into making a successful player, in my mind, winning.
I did hear bells.
That's the best. Here is Jerry Jones discounting numbers with his own number. Here is Jerry Jones discounting analytics with his own analysis. I don't want to hear about analytics because 80% of football is not about analytics. Nothing says Dallas Cowboys quite like this. It is Jerry Jones beholden to his way, which is definitely the old throwing a cowboy hat, 6 shooters at your sides, let's go play some pigskin, boys. It's all too perfect. But not only is it forget analytics, it is I've got my own personal analytics. You know, it's like Yogi Berra said, 80% of baseball is mental and the other half is hitting the baseball or something like that. Here's Jerry Jones. You know what? 80% of analytics is wrong.
Sorry, Jerry.
All we know is that in that game, for the first 3 quarters, the Cowboys were not making tacos. And then in the 4th quarter, especially with the game on the line and the onside kick, they started making tacos.
Jimmy Johnson said, as long as you're making tacos, I love you. As soon as you don't make no tacos, I don't love you no more.
And I think that's what we saw. A huge flip of the momentum of taco making in the 4th quarter of that game. Here's Doug Peterson, head coach in Philadelphia, as Carson Wentz has been awful through the first 2 games.
Some of the throws that he's missing are sort of like layups. What could be the reason for some of those easier misses that he's missing?
Have you played quarterback in the National Football League?
I have not, Doug.
Okay. They're not layups. There ain't a throw out here that's a layup. And so, you know, some of it is just timing with young guys. Some of it is just, you know, Carson just being, you know, not accurate at that particular time. It could be that, there's a defensive guy that flashed a hand where he's, you know, got to change his arm angle at the split second. There's all kinds of reasons for accuracy, and these are things that we continue to work on and will continue to work on, you know, the entire season.
Uh-oh. It's week two, and Doug Peterson's getting snippy with reporters. It's week two going into week three. It's the middle of September, and already Doug Peterson is openly questioning the questions about his quarterback. It's week three, and already Doug Peterson is having to dig his quarterback out of a hole and defend him, even though the entire city knows that Carson Wentz has looked like puke the first 2 weeks. Mraz, I can tell you this, having watched a lot of Philadelphia sports over the years, this is where things don't end well for the Eagles.
This has immediately jumped to the top of my power rankings of NFL storylines I love this year. Basically, Carson Wentz looking terrible and Doug Peterson having to defend him and fall on the sword when there's already a statue of him outside the building, as we alluded to earlier in the week. This is great, and I love the reporter's answer, the literal answer back to Peterson. I have not, Doug. Like, he knows. He knows you have not played quarterback.
Have you played quarterback in the National Football League?
I have not, Doug.
I have not.
Doug, you know I haven't. Can you please just answer the question here?
I have not, Doug.
Okay. Can you please tell me, though, why the guy that you have spent $120 million on doing exactly that can't hit, you know, a receiver 5 yards downfield? Can we ask why that's happening? Forget it. I mean, this is where, again, like, you have a couple of things that'll happen early and then it just sets the tone for the entire season. The Eagles have pulled a rabbit out of the hat before. They did so by winning the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. All seemed lost when Carson Wentz went down. But Wentz going into year five, being this bad this early, and Peterson having a scramble for every excuse in the book about why, is not a good look right now. And finally, here's Drew Brees, where many started to look at Brees' effort on Monday night. It also said maybe he's losing some arm strength and maybe this is the end of the road for number nine. Here was Brees.
I feel good. I feel good. Borderline great. and I'd say, you know, again, you know, my job is to move the football, get first downs, possess the ball, score points, right? And so however we can do that, we're going to do it. You know, one of the statistics that was thrown out after the game was, you know, the yards per attempt or something like that. I mean, there are many statistics I do not pay one bit of attention to, and that would be one of them.
Yeah, but Drew paid enough attention to know that that was one of the statistics thrown out about him. So here's the thing about Drew Brees. I will always like Drew Brees. I think Brees' temperament is so perfect for a franchise quarterback. Brees has been the consummate professional. Yes, Brees put his foot in his mouth a couple of months ago over the summer, but quickly retracted and understood and learned from the situation. And this is what we ask about. This is what we ask for the people that lead, to get more information and then be able to reassess their own decisions. That's what makes great leaders. It's why Bill Belichick's one of the greatest coaches ever to do it, is because he is never resting on his laurels saying, I know everything. He's always reassessing, what do we do? How do we do it? We can't just expect to do it well the next time around because we did it well the first time around. I just think Brees is a Hall of Famer, an all-timer, etc. But Drew Brees is clearly listening to what's being said about him because he's referencing it there. He's discounting it. And when you discount it, you start to sound like a little defensive. And I think there's some truth there. I think what I love about Drew Brees is he's been doing the same stupid stuff. I shouldn't say stupid because it's work. The same stuff as Tom Brady about eating really healthy, no white sugars, no grains, this and that. And he never gets any credit for that because Tom Brady writes a coffee table book about it and can't stop promoting his TB12 method. He's got that dopey logo on everything that he wears. And Brees never mentions it, ever. Brees has been doing the same things Brady's doing and has done, which is why he's playing until 41 years old. But the fact is, eating well, which is really important, doesn't save your career from your arm strength and from, you know, your mental acuity being maybe a little less because you're getting older. 41 years old in the NFL is really old. It's always been really old. It always will be really old. And Brady and Breeze have been able to stave off Father Time for long enough, but it's coming to roost, and it's going to happen. And, you know, the 2020 season's going to unfold a little bit like a slow-motion car wreck. You know what's going to happen, and you just have to. Every moment, every second's going to be picked apart like it's an hour. The reason I say that is because we've got 16 games between Brady and 16 with Breeze. There's inevitably going to be four each or five each where they look 43 and 41. And we'll have all week to discuss those things. And this past week, Breeze at times looked that. And week one, Brady looked like that. And you might say, well, don't overreact. It's a long season. They'll get it together. Yeah, but you might also say that's the proper reaction because that's their age and that's what's coming. That locomotive's coming. It's just when it gets into its train station. And by the end of the season, you'll see it's going to be in the train station. And Breeze is going to retire. And Brady might push for another year. He might. He might not. He's got another good year of money coming to him. But when we talk about Breeze looking old and when they hear those criticisms to get and bristle about it, it's just the truth. And yes, football is a little worse for it because in their circumstances and shoes because you have a full week to digest it and analyze it instead of you play the next night or two nights later and try to recoup from it. But it's the reality. Breeze and Brady are going to look 43 and 41 at times this year. And we'll have big chunks of time to dissect it. And those guys are not going to like it.
Inside, it's this date in mothership history.
Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. What are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. Let's go back 1 year, this date 2019. Where it was hazardous to your health to be inside the CBS Sports Radio bathrooms. Roll tape. I was just like, whoa, hey, backed away, closed the door, ran away. And I've never been back. And thankfully, I've never seen that person in this building again because it would be too devastating for all the parties.
First of all... You are equally to blame as the poor raccoon, man. So I've been there where all of a sudden I have to cross my legs and cover my privates 100% and just be there. There's no more vulnerable position.
It's the most vulnerable thing of all time.
But what you're saying is a little different than the trash.
What am I supposed to do?
Number one, there is a very easy game to play that I want to teach everybody in case you don't play it. If you're going into a situation where there are stalls, all you got to do is bend down, take a peek, and play the sneaker game. Unless they're going to the bathroom with their legs pointed straight up in the air like they're at a gynecologist appointment, there's no excuse for you not to spot that somebody's sitting in the stall by just taking a quick peek at their feet. Now, maybe you don't want to know what sneakers they are because you don't want to know who did the business and have to see them later on walking around in those Adidases, but that's a different story. Number two, a little knock. If you're not sure after the shoe game, send a knock. If after not spotting shoes and no answer on a knock...
Now, wait a second. You're telling me every stall you've ever gone into, you have looked and knocked.
Of course, because I know what it's like on the other end. I have absolutely taken a peek. Well, I've been like, all right, pair of Timberlands there, pair of New Balances there, I'm out.
Well, how did you get walked in on?
Sometimes the locks can be flimsy on those doors. They twist. It's not foolproof. It's basically like pushing a piece of sheetrock with one little lock. All you gotta do is do that person doing the do a little justice and just take a peek for their shoes. And again, if they want to point their feet straight up in the air or get a squatty potty or do something like that, then that's on them. But usually their feet should be firmly planted on that ground, easy to spot, and exactly. And you just do the knock.
It was one of the most jarring experiences of my life. I'll never forget the look on this man's face. I'll never forget it. He looked like when you pull up the driveway and the raccoon is in your garbage can.
The light shine right in the face.
He quickly whips his head around and his eyes meet the headlights. and he just knows that he's nailed. He tries to go scurrying, but there's nowhere to go. He's like in the garbage can. I'll never forget the look on this guy's face, and our eyes locked, and it was really devastating for me. And I'll never forget that man's face. Thankfully, I've never seen that man again, but he was a coworker, probably worked at a different floor. Maybe after that, he was so humiliated, he left the company. But that was as devastating to me as it was for him. And now, the reason was exactly as you said, Mraz. Sometimes those locks, the stall locks, are not strong. They're just, you know, they've not serviced in a long time, and people pounded them back and forth. And that's exactly what happened here. He had locked it, I believe, but I had opened it, and the lock just burst open.
That it's brutal, and honestly, at work, that is the worst thing that could happen. The second worst thing is walking towards the bathroom with somebody who puts the newspaper under their arm and waltzes on in, and then you go, "Are you really? I mean, are we setting up like this is a flight to Atlanta right now?" And we're at work.
Really?
Those two scenarios are tough, because now you just picture them the rest of the day going through the New York Times for 15 minutes as they do what they have to do.
Yeah, you're like, really? USA Today and a bag of peanuts. This is your Tuesday morning.
Two.
Now, Mraz, when you got walked in on, I've never luckily been walked in on. When you got walked in on, did your eyes meet the guy who walked in on you?
DA, you couldn't have made a more perfect comparison. It was, there's a flashlight in the garage. There's the raccoon on the shelf. That's basically was me. I was frozen. And then you do the thing with your hands where you don't know where to put your hands. I'm going to block my privates, but I'm also going to take a hand and I'm going to, like, you know, hold it on my side of my thighs because I don't want you seeing my hairy thighs. Because 9 times out of 10, you walk in on somebody in the bathroom, they always
hairy
have the hairy
thighs.
They always
you
have the
arrived
hairy thighs.
At the Christmas party without a shirt, and you're worried about your hairy thighs.
Yeah, I don't know. Your thighs are very vulnerable too when you get walked in on. So now you got a hand there, and you're doing all this, and you're going, "Just get out! Why are you taking a long pee? It's like a pee takes forever."
Was that at work? At our work, CBS Sports Radio.
I don't remember the location. It might have been at an amusement park or a mall. Because I'm big on public restoration, but that's it.
Yeah, restoration. Out of all of the football injuries that we will hear and read about this upcoming football season, will anything be scarier than Tyrod Taylor? Tyrod Taylor had cracked ribs going into Sunday's game against the Chiefs. The team doctors gave him a painkiller injection into the rib area. And when they did so, they accidentally punctured his lung. That sent him to the hospital. Obviously, he could not play. It's why late word came down that Justin Herbert was going to have to start on Sunday. Herbert played very well in the loss. And I think it's also the reason that Anthony Lynn would not commit to Justin Herbert moving forward. It's because that's a pretty humiliating way to lose your job, that you didn't do anything about it, that you had cracked ribs and wanted to play through them. You were tough enough to take an injection, a painkiller injection, and the team doctors accidentally punctured your lung. Now, because of this, there's question marks about whether Tyrod Taylor is going to play again, at least for the foreseeable future, because he couldn't play on Sunday because of this. And there's now doctors, I think there's medical advice swirling around the Chargers saying, no, you can't put him back out there right now. Anthony Lynn said it was, quote, just a mistake. It happens, and Tyrod's not angry. Anthony Lynn strongly backed Tyrod Taylor after that Sunday loss against the Chiefs to play this week. But again, there's no one right now that knows what this is going to look like moving forward, because is there complications from this? Also, what does the NFLPA say about this? Again, this is a team doctor accidentally puncturing the lung of a player who's about to go in and play quarterback. There's going to be legal team involved. There's going to be the Players Association union stuff involved. There's going to be a lot of stuff here. Now, Tyrod Taylor getting that injection is not entirely uncommon. It happens, but it does carry that risk. But it is exceedingly rare that a team doctor screws it up like that. Apparently, Tyrod Taylor suffered two cracked ribs when the Chargers beat the Bengals in week number one. He played through it. Apparently, he had it for all game, but he suffered it in the first series of the game. And he planned just to take the painkilling injection for the rib injury and to play on Sunday. This is a terrifying situation. The fact that this could happen in the NFL, where you would think team doctors are incredibly careful about all of these things, that something like this could not happen when you're talking about billion-dollar enterprises. But apparently it did. These are multi-million-dollar patients in billion-dollar enterprises, and this is not the place where you're supposed to mistakenly puncture a guy's lung. But this has got to be why Anthony Lynn is so defensive about Tyrod Taylor. And in this case, I got to kind of walk back some of the criticism I may have had of Anthony Lynn. Because I get it more. When Tyrod Taylor has two cracked ribs on the opening drive of week one and plays the entire game with them, whether they knew it or not, and they come out with a win, and you understand later that week, after that, man, our quarterback played with two cracked ribs for an entire game, basically, and we got the W. You've got a lot of admiration for him. That's not a guy you want to throw under the bus. That's a guy that the rest of the locker room, you're hoping, takes a page from. Whether this is smart or dumb, this is the culture of football. That you're there for your teammates even when you're wounded. And if you're the quarterback, you're a leader, you need to be counted on. And so Taylor passed all of those tests. I mean, he had a check mark at every one of those boxes. And then going into this game, he had cracked ribs and was preparing to play. He had cracked ribs and he was going to get a big long needle stuck into his chest cavity. And moments before the game, again, your quarterback, who wants to go out there and he's battered and wounded, is going to take an injection to his chest to go out there and play for you. And the doctor screwed it up and made it a really scary situation and punctured the lung, so your rookie quarterback has to go out there and play. And despite him playing well, you don't want to gloss the rookie too much, because what it does is it basically throws shade on your starting quarterback who just suffered that. So I get it more. I get it. I don't know if Anthony Lynn is going to be able to stave off the Wolves for very long, because let's just say this week the medical team goes, you can't play Tyrod this week. He can't play. And Herbert goes out there and they win, and he throws for 300 yards again. I mean, it's going to be really hard to go back to Tyrod Taylor if Herbert starts again, plays well, etc. But for the moment, you know what? Anthony Lynn's doing the right thing for his team, because this is actually not about football. If this was just about assessing Justin Herbert versus Tyrod Taylor and saying Herbert played well and we just want to have him keep playing well, it's one thing. And ignoring that is what I think a lot of people thought he was doing. It's more about the construct of a locker room. It's more about the construct of leadership. And it's more about construct of player accountability and player responsibility versus what your medical team foobarred. I really hope Tyrod Taylor's okay, and I really hope he gets a start again this year, because Taylor has been searching for a place to be wanted, and he's wanted to be a starting quarterback, and he's wanted to be given the reins, and he's wanted to be a leader, and he's wanted to do all the right things. You've got to give Tyrod Taylor that. He has always wanted to be the solution and be a leader and do the right things. He's always done the... He just hasn't been a great quarterback. He gets the shot, and his opening drive, he cracks his ribs and then has the team doctor puncture his lung and then could lose his job because of it. It would be brutal for that reason. Mraz, you defended Anthony Lynn on Monday. I give you credit. You said this is not the time to make a switch anyway to Justin Herbert.
Right.
But now learning what happened behind the scenes, it gives it a whole different context as well.
Of course, and have just a little bit of compassion for Tyrod Taylor. The guy is trying to be a leader. He's in, I would say, an uncomfortable position anyway, having just gone through this in Cleveland with Baker Mayfield, where he's the starter, but everybody knows the rookie's coming, and here he is doing everything he can with basically his starting career on the line, trying to stave this off, playing through a cracked rib, and then having to go through that injection and having a slip-up that is not his fault happen. Of course the coach has to go to bat with him. And I think that Justin Herbert wouldn't be offended or slighted by that in the least, because he understands it too. Look, I know Hard Knocks maybe wasn't everybody's cup of tea this year, but Anthony Lynn showed a lot of real leadership qualities on camera, navigating what was an uncomfortable training camp, and Tyrod Taylor was front and center with that as a quarterback, and it's very clear that that locker room respects the heck out of him. So Anthony Lynn, I think, garnered a lot more respect from his team this week, you know, despite wins or losses, or maybe, you know, people don't love the way he coaches games and they're not where they thought they would be as an organization yet. But to go to bat for a quarterback that just literally put everything on the line and had to go through what he went through is something any player in that team could admire. And I think he's done himself much more of a service to that locker room and respect and earning his stripes there as a head coach than he would have been just doing the easy thing that public perception wanted him to do, which was, okay, it's Justin's team now.
Yeah, and it's funny because some of the criticism levied against Anthony Lynn's not always fair. He did go 12-4 two seasons ago, and the Chargers made the playoffs, won a playoff game, and then got to the divisional round. Remember, they beat Lamar Jackson when Lamar was just a rookie, and then they got to the divisional round, and they kind of laid an egg in Foxborough. But, you know, Lynn did have that very good season. Last year, look, I don't know if Anthony Lynn is a great coach, but he has some pelts on the wall. Last year, he's dealing with the end of Phillip Rivers, throwing him out of basically every game in that season. And now he's showing good coaching. You know, he knows he can't ignore or shove Tyrod Taylor into the corner because of what that would send as a message to the locker room, especially guys in the locker room that are like, damn, Tyrod was going to play quarterback for us with two broken ribs and then got a punctured lung. That's a very sensitive situation for any player who knows he's at the mercy of the doctors. He's at the mercy of the medical team. So Lynn is being a good coach there. I think you're right about Justin Herbert as well. Herbert would totally understand why he would not get the start again, or he would just not be glossed right now by the head coach. Can you also believe, though, about Tyrod Taylor's luck? I mean, this is exactly what you're talking about going into week two. Tyrod knew he couldn't not play with two cracked ribs because he could lose his job. It's week two, and he knows Justin Herbert's a top 10 pick. So he's got to play, because if he doesn't, he might have only started one game in his Chargers career. So he's forced into that position where he's, I've got to play. I've got cracked ribs, but I got to play. Shoot it up, Doc. He gets two punctured lungs out, or he gets a punctured lung out of it. It's crazy.
Yeah. And another part on this Justin Herbert thing that I just think really is separate from the Tyrod Taylor part of this. Justin Herbert played well, right? We were all, you know, thought he was, wow, thrust upon that spot against the Chiefs. Has anybody all week mentioned once that the Chargers defense? I mean, the only reason we're even having this conversation about Justin Herbert is because the Chargers defense didn't allow Patrick Mahomes to go up and down the field and put up 38-plus points on him like he does to everybody. The Chargers defense, I think in many ways, made this decision by public perception harder, because if the Chiefs go win that game 38 or 41-20, this isn't even a conversation. It's okay, Herbert started on short notice, he had some nice moments, Chargers still got blown out, it's not his time yet. That game was tight thanks to the Chargers defense playing against the best quarterback in the world, one of the best game plans we've seen versus Mahomes in a long time, and that's what kept that game tight more than what Justin Herbert did. And yet everybody walked out of there talking about, well, look, they were close with the Chiefs, and now this has to be Justin Herbert's team.
Well, yes and no. I agree that the Chargers made that a game because, I mean, the Chiefs needed a fourth quarter comeback just to win. I mean, they were terrible offensively. But Herbert's numbers were good. He had 300 yards passing. He had the rushing touchdown. And I threw out that stat that kind of got run, that there's only three guys that have ever done that in their debut: Otto Graham, Cam Newton, and now Justin Herbert. So even if he had only gotten those numbers in a 38-16 loss, they'd still be those numbers. I think people would still be like, oh, you know, Herbert played pretty well.
I'm not denying that he played well, but the story was Justin Herbert almost beat Patrick Mahomes. And that's why we have to go with with Herbert. Yes, when you dig deeper, the numbers were great. But I think the masses of people coming in saying this has to be Justin Herbert is because they walked away going, oh my goodness, the Chargers with Justin Herbert went to overtime with the Chiefs. When in reality, it's an incredible job holding Patrick Mahomes and that Chiefs offense to only 20-something points.
It's a really weird way to win the job if Tyrod Taylor can't play again. But for Herbert, look, you got to take advantage of the situation. Sure. And remember, Tom Brady's Tom Brady because of Drew Bledsoe. I forget exactly what the injury was. Was that, I don't think it was a punctured lung that Mo Lewis forced, but I think it might have been cracked ribs as well for Drew Bledsoe, knocking him out of that game in week two or week three.
I believe it was week two. But yes, I think it was cracked ribs as well.
So interesting. Could it be that that comes around again?
The sizzle of the best goals. The saltiness of the best games.
He's without a stick. He makes another save. And still another save. And play is stopped.
We crave the nightly action in Edmonton and Toronto of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
It's a hockey, you know. It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad? He's a good guy.
It's your morning serving of Canadian bacon. Only on the DA Show.
Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit, car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's on top of what Geico could already save you. What are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. It was a 1-1 series going into Game 3. Mraz, take it away.
DA, Tampa was off and flying with a goal from Nikita Kucherov, but at 1-0, the story of the night began to unfold. Back for the first time in 211 days was Lightning captain Steven Stamkos. And on his first shot of the night, he sings, "Stam, I feel like a winner."
It's grabbed by Radulov at center ice. Deals it in. Ruda pokes it out to Victor Hedman. Cross a Stamkos down the right wing. Cross the blue line, right circle. Stamkos open. Shoot, score! Stamkos! And it's 2-0 Lightning!
Look at the players going crazy for Steven.
That, courtesy of Dave Mishkin on the Lightning Radio Network, that goal would give Dallas a 2-0, oh, give Tampa a 2-0 lead, and it would go on to win 5-2 over the Stars. Goalie Anton Khudobin, giving up 5 goals, was a rough look. You may as well have called the Stars Khudobin and the Blowfish last night. Yeah. Our sound of the night, of course, it comes to us from Stamkos on what it was like to score on his return back.
It was just an amazing experience to share with my teammates. You know, there's been a lot of hard work and different things going on behind the scenes. So just to be able to get out into a game and have an impact on a game, which a month ago may have never been possible.
If you want a nugget that doesn't come from Denver, here is one. Nobody has more points per game versus the Dallas Stars in their career than Steven Stamkos. He had core muscle surgery in the first week of March and would not have ever returned, obviously, in the 2020 season without the pause for the pandemic. And this run to a cup for Tampa in the bubble. Now he could feel like he's earned his name engraved into the cup if Tampa covers 2 more wins in Dallas. And that is your Canadian bacon. Chicken
nuggets.
You know, the Tampa covers, too, is pretty good. Let me say, this is a great story for Steven Stamkos because, as you said, this could have never happened unless the playoffs were delayed. And this is a little bit like we were talking about Drew Bledsoe getting knocked out of the 0-1 season, Brady taking over, leading them to the Super Bowl. Remember, Bledsoe came into the AFC Championship game and actually had a pretty clutch couple of drives there to help the Patriots into the Super Bowl. So he contributed in a meaningful way in a meaningful game after years of, you know, contending for that team. And Stamkos is the same way. It would be such a sin if the Lightning finally win the Stanley Cup and he didn't have a real role when it mattered. So this is pretty cool that he not only now has a role in his playing, but is also scoring. And it also, Mraz, has got to give the Lightning just another edge here in this series to get a player that great for the last couple of games.
Yeah, you're talking about a legitimate top 15 player in the NHL, and if he's scoring on his first shot and he's right, look out. This could be over in 5 for Dallas.
Yeah, really cool story that Stamkos, who is, what, the best player in franchise history by a long shot, would get a chance to play in the Stanley Cup Final.
It should also be noted, DA, it is very much on the table that the Brooklyn Nets win a championship before the Boston Celtics do after that trade.
That is such a good point and such a ridiculous concept that the Nets were completely fleeced, just fleeced by Danny Ainge. And you're right. I mean, next year, if KD is healthy and Kyrie is healthy, they would be the odds-on favorite to win in the Eastern Conference.
Right.
They'd be the face. And, you know, if they won a championship over the next 2 years, they could beat the Celtics to even just getting to the NBA Finals since the trade. Bogues, there's no way you could explain your way out of that one.
Yes, I can. We haven't even seen the Nets exist yet. Let them play a game with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, who, by the way, you blame for the Celtics' issues 2 years ago. They have a brand new head coach. We have no idea how he's going to work out. He might work out perfectly. It might not. But to say, I mean, yes, theoretically, the Nets could win one before the Celtics. But the Celtics are sitting in the Eastern Conference final right now. It's not going well by any measure. There are so many things to talk about this morning. You don't need to throw the hypothetical Nets mysterious championship out there to add on to this. It's completely unnecessary.
It's on the table, Bogus. You said not Kevin Durant and Kyrie.
I mean, anything
take the
is
floor
on,
and
then anything is on the table.
But it's
the,
not,
the
it's
Raptors
not,
could win a second. And
but
I know
it's not like saying
Trey,
the Hornets could win the title. It's not like saying, you know, suddenly the Magic are going to win the title. What Mraz is saying is the Nets will probably be the favorites of the Eastern Conference to come out. So that's not a huge conjecture.
No, it's not a huge conjecture, but I don't think that applies to anything going on with the Celtics right now, nor is it needed to decide whether their window is closing or anything like that. I don't think it's no part of this conversation right
look,
now.
You like Brad Stevens, but let's take that out of it. Me and Mraz are much more lukewarm on Brad Stevens. You like him, but let's take that out of it. If you were just to go back to, I don't know, let's say 3 years ago, when it was the bottom of the barrel for the Nets and they had no assets and no draft picks because they had been heisted by the Celtics and the Celtics had just assembled this really good roster, and you would have said at that time, guess what? The Nets win a championship before the Celtics. It would have felt like an alternate universe. Like, that was not in reality, and all Mraz is saying is suddenly that's actually a reality.
Exactly.
I understand that it's a reality, but I mean, I think it's such a pie in the sky, like, hypothetical that it doesn't apply. Because, yes, I mean, anything could happen. And you can dismiss the Hornets, but any team like that, the Hornets, the Magic, if any one of them wins a title before this Celtics team does,
but
it's a knock on Boston as well.
But the Magic and the Hornets aren't the Nets who would be the Vegas favorites to do it.
And also the connection is the trade. The trade where the Nets were slaughtered on it. And everybody said, well, now the Celtics are going to rule the East. That's the point. These teams and franchises will forever be connected by that. And if the Nets happen to win a championship before the Celtics, which, again, is on the table, I mean, it's a disaster for Boston after everybody said they fleeced them.
I understand. All I'm saying is, let's just get there first. Again, like, it's off in the future, and it may never happen. Like,
get
let's figure
first,
out
why
now.
Why are we doing this? Then why are we doing sports radio? We're having sports conversation. It's a good hypothetical.
Yeah, because you can have a million
first
conversations without throwing out the about going as far as the Nets could win before the Celtics. Look, yes, they could. Of course they could.
Is the Celtics disappointment?
To me, that doesn't matter today.
No. Is the Celtics' disappointment not one of, if not, the biggest storyline in sports talk today?
Today, yes. Sure.
Okay, so then how is it not on the table to talk about what's next when they're one loss from elimination and how they could be dealing with that next year? How is that not fair?
Well, for two things. First of all, they haven't lost yet, and they are not going to survive this series. I get that. But let me ask you this now, because here's something that actually could happen far sooner than a Nets championship. What if the Miami Heat go on, and the Miami Heat beat whoever survives the West, and they win an NBA title? Then do you have to circle back at all and do any less critique of the Celtics because they lost to a team that was on a magical run that even LeBron couldn't stop? What about that hypothetical? Does that change anything? Does that make it less disappointing that the Celtics lost to a Heat team and then went and beat LeBron for an NBA title?
No, I don't think that there's any shame in losing to the Heat. The Heat are a really good team, and they're playing like it, and this could be a really good team for a while. If Hero and Bam continue to grow at this rate, I think the point is 3 to 4 years ago, certainly 3 years ago, when Danny Ainge had stockpiled all of those draft picks, had all of that cap space, and was going to swing for the fences and then did draft Tatum and Brown and seemed to also totally dupe the Sixers as well in the Markelle Fultz deal, it seemed like the Celtics were set up to be an Eastern Conference dynasty. I'm sure I said that. And to be here 3 years later, and the Nets, by the way, were just trash and had no hope and would be in the dumpster forever. If you fast forward 3 years, when the Celtics get eliminated here, the Vegas odds for next year's Eastern Conference Championship will probably have the Nets one and the Celtics below that. That concept, even right there, is a crazy thing dating back to where we were even 2 years ago.
Sure, but 3 years ago also, too, if I told you the Nets would eventually have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, you wouldn't believe me either.
But that's so the point, that they had no assets and they had no hope, and the Celtics had all of the assets.
The Nets Celtics connection is always going to be there. The Sean's point about the Nets winning a title before the Celtics would be far more damning in my mind if the Nets won a title, I guess, on the same trajectory off of that trade. But A, the trade was forever ago, and B, the trade had was never in, the trade had no connection to the possibility of one day I'm going to have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving on my team.
I disagree.
How do you disagree?
Because all of these things are interconnected. You have to realize, if you went back to 2015 after that trade and you looked at what the Nets had to build back from, complete rubble. They had no draft picks. They had no cap space. They had no assets. They had no, they didn't even have a coach or a GM.
The trade was 7 years ago.
Well, but you seven. Have you don't but you don't have to go back 7 years to where the Nets had no hope. The Nets had to piece together a front office, hire the right head coach, had to swing deals to acquire even mid-round to late-round draft picks because they were swindled in that thing, and they had to build something akin to a winner to even grab guys like Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Just that's a win in of itself that they could convince Kevin Durant, who, by the way, we know needs to win or else he's going to fight with every schmo on the internet. He wasn't going to a place where he couldn't win. He wasn't going to go to a rebuild. He had to go to a place where he felt optimistic. To have even gotten
and then
there,
brought in three other people you want to play with.
Oh no!
He's not
of course,
into, I want to be with Spencer Dinwiddie.
But hang on, you cannot say that if the Nets were a dysfunctional dumpster fire that he would have wanted to go there. You did know that he went there because they have a strong organization.
He went there, we thought, because he liked Kenny Atkinson, and Kenny Atkinson is now gone. So he's already changed the head coach. The GM who's in charge now wasn't the GM when this trade happened. So again, in 2013, when they're making a trade and working off of that and coming back from all of that, the idea of me having Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving one day, while yes, they wanted to put themselves in position to find stars, to me, there's too much time has elapsed,
folks,
to draw.
This is where there's a huge hole in your argument, because if you were... If you had the choice to be Danny Ainge or running the Nets in 2016, you would have taken Danny Ainge, and everybody else would have. And if you and so that's a losing hand you were playing. And if we fast forward 3 years later or 4 years later, and the losing hand is the favorite to win the conference, and the guy that you'd rather be is not, that's a story. That's a win for the Nets.
Of course it's a win for the Nets. It's not going to change the way, if the Celtics never win a title with it coming off, or even get to play for a title in the finals, coming off of all of they've done, all the things you've laid out, it's a failure, period. It's not going to change my grading of their failure, whoever else wins the title. If that's wrong on my part, then I'll eat it. But like the Durant-Irving marriage now in Brooklyn, which we still have never actually seen on the court, by the way, is still so far-fetched. I can't hold that against Boston. There's a million other things to hold against them if they never get close to a final. I don't need the Nets, any level of Nets success, to dismiss what the Celtics are, you know, or assess what the Celtics haven't done over the last couple of years. If they go out in five games against Miami, you can do whatever you want about Brad Stevens. You can talk about changing rosters. I don't then care what happens from the Nets 2 or 3 years from now. Because again, we're still now we're even further away from the trade and further away from the rebuild. The Celtics by themselves are the issue. To me, the outside stuff, as connected as it may be, matters less to me than it matters to you guys.
Mraz is shaking his head.
I mean, just now I know what Katie Bogus is getting Andrew for Christmas. A lot of green underpants, because I didn't know he was such a Celtics honk. Who knew? Who knew?
I'm not. Listen. It's almost a failure.
No. It's almost like you're Sean Bradley, and Kaplan was one of the Monstars, and he's taking your body and your talents, and he's talking as Mr. Celtics mouthpiece through you right now.
But again, but here's the problem, right? Again, yes, and I do like Brad Stevens, but you're talking about him as if this team hasn't made the playoffs. They're right now in the Eastern Conference
Finals. So that's what we play for. The great Boston Celtics play for only the playoffs. You're talking about 2-3 years down the road. If they go a decade after that trade and have no hardware to show for it, it's an unmitigated disaster if the Nets are having freaking parades down Flatbush Avenue after they made that trade. It's a disaster. It's an undefendable disaster, and Brad Stevens is the damn face of it. That's it. It's end of it, period. End of story. End of discussion. You're wrong. You lose. Good day, sir.
It's a disaster no matter what happens to the Nets. That's my point. It doesn't make it, to me, it doesn't make it worse. Now, the one thing that
they can't to make it worse. It's bad. They did nothing. They have done nothing but come up short in Eastern Conference Finals since that trade. And the team that was left with nothing attracted two free agents and are about to be the favorite to go to an NBA Finals. If, like I said at the beginning, it is on the table that the Nets win a championship before the Celtics did after that trade, that makes it more of a disaster. I don't know how that's arguable.
Also, I would argue this. That the Brooklyn Nets, since that trade, have developed lesser talent better than the Celtics have developed top talent. I mean, what they've done with Spencer Dinwiddie.
The Celtics are in the Eastern Conference Final.
Well, Bogues, Bogues. As I mentioned before, the Celtics have five top 10 picks. The Nets had none of those, and they brought D'Angelo Russell back from the dead. His career was over. They found Spencer Dinwiddie, and they made him into a legitimate player. They found Caris LeVert, that nobody had any idea could be anything, and he's an all-star. They found Jarrett Allen late in the first round. They've done more with less than the Celtics have, even though they haven't gotten as far in the playoffs. The Nets have had nothing close.
I think that's a preposterous sentence. The Celtics are in the Eastern Conference Final again. I don't know how you can say this is my problem with the whole thing.
They've got more talent than anybody else in the East.
Do they?
Yes. Yes. Nobody else has five top 10. Nobody else has five top 10 picks. Find me another roster. The Bucks are trying to make Chris Middleton a superstar, Bogues. Nobody in the East has five top 10 picks. Five? Are you kidding me? Most of them don't have two.
The draft picks.
The Nets have two top 10 picks. It's Kyrie and Kevin Durant. They haven't even drafted their own top five picks.
I just don't know. There are so many things you can critique them about being down 3-1 in this series. Eric Spoelstra's been a better head coach. You can absolutely say that the Celtics need one of their secondary third-level players to be Tyler Hero. Where's Jaylen Brown's 30-point game? Where's Kemba's 28-point, 15-assist game? Those are all valid points. I don't know why I have to go as far as throwing Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving in or telling me that the Nets have done better with their talent than the Celtics had. Why do you have to go that far?
We're arguing the same thing. We can just sit here and say that the Celtics' talent is not living up to its potential. And you and I can agree on that.
Currently at the moment, 100%, yes. Now, I've given them a pass for losing to LeBron. I don't know who gets blamed for letting Kemba, for letting Kyrie mess them up. This one is on them. I also think that the bubble could be an issue, so we disagree on that as well. But this one is on them. But like right now is on them. To me, you go too far sometimes. And you don't need to have all these huge haymakers. You've got a million jabs you could throw at them right now to knock them down for being down 3-1 to the Heat, who appeared to be an inferior team, but maybe they're not.
Well, maybe they're not, but I mean, I think what we would probably agree on is that the Celtics have more talent in the series, and they're losing 3-1, and this will be two straight years that they didn't get to the NBA Finals when LeBron wasn't in the Eastern Conference. So you can't even blame it on running into LeBron.
No, you can't. You can blame it on them. I just think in different ways than you guys are. That's all. Why don't we get stuck?
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
I'm laughing at Cap's graphic on the screen right now. If you're watching it, watchda.com, inside the radio.com app, or on Twitch, there is just a yelping cat.
Well, we say good morning, Florida man, I guess in honor of Thursday Night Football being an all-Florida affair. This Florida man is accused of stealing something I didn't think a person from any state would want to steal. At first, he was seen on security footage at a vet clinic inspecting one of those like metal boxes you see outside the doctor's office that they put like the blood test and blood vials and other stuff in for testing.
Biohazard container.
Well, not the used needles, the stuff that they put your samples in that then the lab comes and takes to go do tests on. About 20 minutes later, a truck pulls up, a guy gets out wearing the same clothes as the dude who was inspecting the box, takes the box, and drives off. Inside the box, vials of cat blood. I don't want to know why anyone's stealing cat blood. I mean, it just, no thanks on the follow-up to this story. I don't know what he wants to do with it, but this guy took it, and hopefully he's going to enjoy it and quiet him, leave me alone.
A couple of questions.
Stories?
Here.
You have cat blood stories?
This is the ultimate caper. So this guy dressed up like the truck delivery guy, stole the truck. Like, did he somehow knock out the normal driver of it? I mean, how did he get behind the truck?
No, it was his truck. He was just, I guess what they couldn't confirm was his face the second time around. So the first time they could see it was him, the second time they could just only match his clothes. He took the box and got back in presumably his truck and left. I don't think there was a double thievery here. He just cased the joint and then went back and got his cat blood.
Okay, so this is not the normal driver or delivery guy of the cat vials. This is just a rando.
No.
This is a rando that came up on the vet clinic, was poking around, saw the box of cat blood, and was like, oh, I want this box of cat blood. I'm throwing it in the back of my truck.
Exactly.
Number two, they haven't found out who did this yet. They just have the security footage, but they have not been able to identify who did this.
No, they want your help. If you live in the area, they want your help. If you've seen this man before, or there's a guy with cat blood running down his face, you should call authorities quickly in this part of
Florida. I was going to say, I mean, I think if you live close to a guy that steals cat blood, you would probably know it. Like, right now, if I offered, okay, who in your neighborhood steals cat blood? Everybody would have number David. One right off the top of your head. Like, oh, yeah, that's Bill at 106. That's definitely, I know that guy.
It's got to be DA. He stored crabs in his laundry room for 24 hours. Of course he would steal cat blood.
And do we know the town that this was in Florida?
So I don't know how to say it this way. Is it St. Augustine or St. Augustine? I never remember in Florida.
St. Augustine. Yeah,
there
that's up near
Saint
Jacksonville,
Augustine.
I believe, right?
Yeah, yes. I have relatives in St. Augustine. I'm going to have to ask them to be on the lookout.
That sounds like a morass.
Now, I do have to play alternate theory here. What if this guy is sort of like Denzel Washington in the movie John Q? What if he has a very anemic cat at home and nobody will treat him and he's out of bills, so he's doing all he can to save his cat's life? Is he not then a hero?
No, yeah, he would be the Robin Hood of cat blood.
Yeah. I mean, if that's what it's taken, he's saving a cat's life, his own cat's life, and this is the only way he could go about it. To be frank, I don't think he should be making fun of the guy. I think that's celebratory. That is a guy doing all he can to save the life of another.
Well, let's play this out. I like this role play here. If Eli needed a blood transfusion, but you could not afford it, would you go and steal pomadoodle blood?
It's a pomsky. It's not a pomadoodle. And I will tell you.
But could you use pomodoro blood? Are they close enough?
I don't even know if there is a pomodoro.
No.
I would do anything
One's type PD, one's type PM.
That dog is my son, and I would do anything I could to save him. I raced just a few weeks ago after he inhaled the chocolate muffin to the vet to make sure his stomach got pumped.
Oh, really?
So I would do anything for Eli, anything. And if that meant stealing Pomsky blood to, because he needed a blood transfusion that nobody else would do and I had to perform it myself, yes, I would do it. Yes, I would.
You would do anything for him except stop littering your floor with dangerous chocolate. It's everywhere. It's a landmine for the dog, but I'll do anything for him.
He went into a pocketbook. It was different.
How did that go, getting his stomach pumped from the chocolate chip muffin?
It was petrified because you can't even go into the vet's clinics right now. You have to wait in your car and they take you out and you sign in. So the whole time I was sitting there going, I hope something doesn't go wrong. I hope they don't slip up. Will I ever see Eli again? I was panicked for about an hour and a half. And they don't give you any updates. You're not in a waiting room where you can ask. And then finally they brought him out all happy and he gave me a lick on the face and we got McDonald's on the way home.
Did he eat the McDonald's?
He had a couple nuggets, of course. I was going to treat
nice,
him.
Nice, which I think is very healthy for a little while.
His stomach was pumped. He had nothing left in it. He had nothing left. I had to give him a little something.
Forget dog food or some type of...
he deserved a treat.
Let's give him deep-fried chicken processed parts.
It was two. It was two nuggets. I had the other eight.
By the way, did he need his stomach pumped, or was this an overreaction by you? You staying in that... Staying in that car was probably feeling like, I hope they don't tie Rod Taylor.
You know, exactly. No, but yeah, it was one of these. It was Danielle's cousin. It was a monstrous muffin. I mean, it was a muffin that looked like an asteroid, and it was double chocolate. She couldn't have gone with the blueberry that day. So, and dogs, as you know, can't have chocolate. So, of course I was fearful. So the point is, I would do anything I could to save Eli. And if this is what this cat owner's doing, then this is what you have to do. He's John Q. I'm in it.
I can't hate your theory on that because I would do anything for Rosie the cat as well. If that meant if I had to steal vials of cat blood from St. Augustine Veterinarian Clinic, I would have to do it. I'd have to save Rosie the cat.
There is Thunder with news. DA hated pets, hated the idea of having a pet. Quote, I would do anything I could to save Rosie the cat. He wants more wiffle ball catches now. He can't get enough.
Well, I need an entire team now because I can't keep. I can't keep throwing it to Rosie, and then she swings and misses. I got to go catch it and then bring it back and then throw it. I need a catcher.
What a turn. DA and Rosie, like peanut butter and jelly.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
After the Celtics fall behind 3-1 of the Eastern Conference Finals, we asked you guys today, is Brad Stevens part of the Celtics' problems? 62% said no. A defensive de-aliens today of Brad Stevens. 38% said yes. Brad's 318 wins are the fourth most by any Celtics head coach. Red Auerbach is number one, Tommy Heinsohn number two, Doc Rivers number three. Interesting. I don't think any of those guys won the titles of the Larry Bird era. Was it Bill Fitch in 81, Casey Jones in 84 and 86? Meaning that the three titles that the Lakers won in the 80s with Bird, none of those coaches are in the top four of wins. Let's get to your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. Myself, Mraz, and Andrew Bogish fighting over the Celtics falling behind 3-1 of this series. Here it is, your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Mraz is shaking his head.
I mean, just now I know what Katie Bogish is getting Andrew for Christmas. A lot of green underpants because I didn't know he was such a Celtics on it. Who knew?
I'm not. Listen. It's almost a failure.
No, it's almost like you're Sean Bradley and Kaplan was one of the Monstars and he's taking your body and your talents and he's talking as Mr. Celtics mouthpiece through you right now.
But
wrong, sir. Wrong.
Again, but here's the problem, right? Again, yes, and I do like Brad Stevens, but you're talking about him as if this team hasn't made the playoffs. They're right now in the Eastern Conference
Finals. So that's what we play for. The great Boston Celtics play for only the playoffs.
Et cetera, et cetera.
You're talking about 2-3 years down the road. If they go a decade after that trade and have no hardware to show for it, it's an unmitigated disaster if the Nets are having freaking parades down Flatbush Avenue after they made that trade. It's a disaster. It's an undefendable disaster. And Brad Stevens is the damn face of it. That's it. End of it. Period. End of story. End of discussion. You're wrong. You lose. Good day, sir.
You lose. Good day, sir.
It's a disaster no matter what happens to the Nets. That's my point. It doesn't make it, to me, it doesn't make it worse. Now, the one thing that
it doesn't have to make it worse. It's bad. They did nothing. They have done nothing but come up short in Eastern Conference Finals since that trade. And the team that was left with nothing attracted two free agents and are about to be the favorite to go to an NBA Finals. If, like I said at the beginning, it is on the table that the Nets win a championship before the Celtics did after that trade, that makes it more of a disaster. I don't know how that's arguable.
Under Section 37B of the contract signed by him.
Also, I would argue this, that the Brooklyn Nets, since that trade, have developed lesser talent better than the Celtics have developed top talent. I mean, what they've done with Spencer Dinwiddie.
The Celtics are in the Eastern Conference Final.
Well, folks,
see, here's my
folks.
Don't say folks again. I'm hanging up on you. Don't say it again.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Good old-fashioned throwdown here on the DA Show. That was a lot of fun. This might be the inopportune time to read this tweet, but Randy tweets and just wanted to express concerning your show yesterday. I like to block out negativity as well. The reason why your show is my favorite is the fact that you improve my mental health by making me laugh and smile. I listen to you guys almost every show since the overnights. So I don't know if us yelling at one another was the best example of blocking out negativity or making you laugh and smile, but maybe you enjoyed us fighting with one another. I was thinking about this when we had Jeff Perlman here on the show. I was talking about this Lakers book, Mraz, that I just ripped through. I know you don't read books, but doesn't this sound like the type of book that even you would read?
Yes. Yes, yes. I love deep dives of my, I would say, early teenage era of sports, which that Lakers three-peat was so much a part of, would absolutely be right in my wheelhouse to go behind the scenes of. Absolutely. That is a wheelhouse book for me.
And I'm always kind of searching for ways. You know, I'm like, Phil Jackson handing Cedric Ceballos some type of book on a trip to Montana. Like, just please, can you read something?
Right.
I feel like I need to do that with you. Just find anything that you might read. So maybe I'll get you this book because I think this could be one of the rare things that have the written word on it that's not like Monday Morning Quarterback by Peter King that you would actually read.
Hey, if it's that or Goosebumps, you know I'm in. So just, you know, please find it my way.
Okay. That'll do it for us this morning here on the show. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel and audio director. Thanks to Andrew Bogish on your headlines. And thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA on the simulcast. Tomorrow's a Target Demo Friday and Cranky Dan Shaughnessy on the Celtics. That's going to be a lot of fun. Be good. The Mothership disconnects.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.